This episode of RHR was brought to you by Unchained. Unchained is here building out the financial services platform for Bitcoin Standard. Their cornerstone product is their Vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig Vault where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. This is a collaborative custody model. They're expanding the offerings for their Vault where you can hold 1 key and you can delegate keys to other institutions. You can hold no keys if you're an enterprise level. They have a lending desk as well. You can use Bitcoin as collateral. If you're a business, to get out a U.S. dollar loan. They have an IRA product. If you want to roll your fiat IRA into Bitcoin, Unchained makes it very easy. They're expanding their product offering every day. They have a trading desk if you want to buy large sums of Bitcoin and send it straight to cold storage, multi-sig cold storage. They make it very easy. Go to unchained.com, set up a call with their consultation team today, their concierge service team. Use the code RHR for $50 off that consultation. Unchained.com. Use the code RHR. This episode of RHR was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space, including this block clock, which is right behind me. Their hardware wallets are the best. I use the Cold Card Q. It's been my daily driver for many months now, and I think it is the best hardware wallet on the market. It is a beautiful form factor. Looks somewhat like a BlackBerry. It's got a battery pack. You never have to plug it into an internet connected device. However, it is QR code and NFC compatible. It's got a QR scanner and an NFC compatible device in it. They just pushed push TX functionality to the Cold Card Q firmware. Actually happened yesterday. And so now if you want to construct and sign a transaction on the Cold Card and then broadcast it via NFC and mempool.space, you can do that with your phone very easily. Best hardware in the space. Go to coinkite.com, pick up a Q, pick up a Cold Card MK4, pick up the SATS cards, the tab signer, the block clocks. If you want the best hardware, go to CoinKite.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Did you really hit it?
We're live right now.
I wanted to send one last message out. We're live. You caught me. Caught me slipping, freaks. Look at this. Oh, how the tables have turned. Matt's got high quality production on his end.
Only took 6 years.
Now I'm pissed off. I'm not in the comments. You're able to one up me right now.
I'm pretty sure with this current setup, I one up you even if you are in the comments.
No.
I guess we'll find out soon enough.
You have a fiat chair. I have a chair that was built before 1971. Very important. Minute detail of the studio in Austin.
I mean, maybe I'll... Freaks, Marty told Logan to take notes before we went live. So, I mean, you don't take notes. You don't take notes on a worse setup.
I like the lapel mic.
It's a good vibe, right?
Yeah. It is. Speaking of good vibes here in South Jersey right now. Beautiful day. Beautiful day to be recording. Beautiful day to talk about Bitcoin. Did you miss the Trump Elon Musk talk on Twitter Spaces on Monday night?
I heard the whole platform went down.
No. It was getting DDoSed. Spaces was.
Yeah.
They had to fix it. But our blue check king figured it out and got it going. And they had a nice conversation, you know.
Who's that, Elon?
Yeah. We're calling him on X. We're calling him our king now.
Did you actually listen to it?
No.
It was quite long. What was it, 3 hours?
Yeah. What was I doing Monday night? I think I had a dinner, family dinner. My sister was in town. Had more important things to do than sit on Spaces and listen to Trump and Elon talk.
Well, the feeling's mutual on that one.
Yeah. You're starting,
I think,
Jess.
The bigger news is, and maybe I'm a little bit biased on it, but the one thing Truth Social had going for it is they had this one person who would post in caps exclusively on Truth Social. And as soon as he posted on Twitter, his shitcoin stock, DJT, his own fucking initials, just immediately started tanking. Because that, like, Truth Social needs that. Like, if Trump starts posting on Twitter, like, Truth Social loses out. And I think people just don't appreciate, with these, when you're trying to battle network effects, like, exclusive content rules. People that are posting specifically one place or another actually does change the ballgame.
Yeah, DJT, which is the ticker for Trump Media and Technology Group Corporation, is down 9% over the last 5 days, 40% over the last month, and 52% over the last 6 months. It's up 38% on the year, though. Checking those stats. Speaking of stats.
It's crazy we have a presidential candidate that like has a stock ticker that's just his initials. Like, that's like – That's the shitcoin culture has hit mainstream at that point.
Has his name on all of his buildings, Trump steak, Trump golf courses, Trump vineyards. It makes sense that he would move to public markets, you know?
Yeah. Revolutionary.
Yeah. Speaking of revolutionary, we're here to talk about the revolutionary digital currency known as Bitcoin. Separate money and state. Current price of Bitcoin is 58,170 cuckbucks. One cuckbuck's going to get you 1,719 sats. Sitting at a $1.15 trillion market cap, we are at block height 856,929, which means that we had a difficulty adjustment between last week's episode and this week's episode. That happened about 29 blocks ago, and it was a negative adjustment of 4.2%. Blocks were coming in at 10 minutes and 22 seconds at average. And like I mentioned, we only have 200 and some odd blocks in this difficulty epoch. So this estimate may be off when we actually adjust in a couple of weeks. We are 1,887 blocks away from the next adjustment, estimated to be on August 29th. 2024, right now, that's looking like a 19.3% upwards adjustment. Blocks been coming in at 8 minutes and 27 seconds on average. There are currently 186,718 transactions in Clark's mempool. And in the mempool, we are seeing 226,538 transactions. However, transaction fees cheap right now. Block space cheap. 3 sats per V-byte across the board from low priority to high priority. If you want to spend right now, it's a good time. It's a good time. Mempools may clear this weekend. Maybe you want to wait till Sunday.
Do you want to bet on it?
I'm good right now.
What is our outstanding bet?
I have no idea. The freaks are going to have to crowdsource that one.
It's the leap year, right?
Yeah, it was the leap year bet.
Okay, well, we'll figure it out if they clear. I'm definitely We'll put a bounty up for the freaks to go back and figure out what the fuck the bet was, because I don't remember.
I think it was leap year bet.
And no, it was definitely a leap year bet. I don't know what the terms were.
I think it's a million sats. Oh, wow. which could hurt during the next leap year.
Yeah.
Weird robot asking in the comments, what the fuck is up with your background, Odell? Blink twice if there's a gun pointed at you. You look like a hostage right now.
I look like a hostage. I got Bitcoin blocks behind me.
That the mempool.
I'm trying not to blink, but we're in good spirits over here at Bitcoin Park.
Vibes are high. How was your interview with the Attorney General? I only got the peep in for a couple minutes last night.
So that was the trying to take Dispatch to the next level. One of the freaks realized and commented what Citadel Dispatch did. There's a new vacuum in the market with what Bitcoin did, moving out of the Bitcoin space. So I want Dispatch to increase the quality of guests. I think we've had some of the best guests the best guests, but we're gonna this is gonna be the cycle that Dispatch takes to the next level. And the first conversation that we did that with was with Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti. I had him on yesterday. Definitely check it out. If you're into video, the video is, like I said, we had Paul here, one of the Bitcoin Park members who's been helping us with production here. And the video quality is really great, way higher than what I'm used to. But it was a good conversation. It was a tight hour. He's new to Bitcoin, but he's very excited about it. And I think his perspective is quite interesting given the legal environment that we all face right now as American Bitcoiners. And I think vibes are high, and I'm optimistic. I will say this week, literally yesterday, there was a Bloomberg leak that now that Harris is polling better than Trump, she's no longer going to pretend that she's pro Bitcoin or pro crypto, and she's just going to adopt the Elizabeth Warren strategy of just trying to destroy this industry as swiftly as possible in America. And I would say two things. First of all, as a Bitcoiner, I think America needs Bitcoin more than Bitcoin needs America. But as an American, it's quite frustrating to see policymakers stand in our way. I think Bitcoiners are incredibly productive citizens that want to see this country be a better place. And unfortunately, for better or for worse, I think it's important for us to have open dialogue with people like the Attorney General, people like Senator Hagerty and Senator Blackburn, Senator Lummis of Wyoming. We need to have open dialogue with these people because our country kind of just hangs in the balance, and the Bitcoin industry in America definitely hangs in the balance.
Yeah. On that note, you don't have it on the list, but did you catch the Crypto for Harris live stream last night?
I did not.
So that happened. It seems like the Democrats are now trying to court the quote unquote crypto industry. We had some heavy hitters like Mark Cuban, Scaramucci, courting the Democrats and putting forth policy recommendations that were, I didn't listen to it. I heard some clips that were absolutely piss poor. And the woman who chairs the Crypto for Harris campaign, her name's Amanda Wick. And Logan, if you can zoom in on the picture, her resume is pretty stellar. She started at the FTC, Financial Crimes Task Force Coordinator for the Department of Justice. She was part of the Asset Forfeiture Coordinator under the United States Attorney's Office. She was a trial attorney for the DOJ, Senior Policy Advisor for the Department of Treasury and FinCEN. Then she went to work as Chief of Legal Affairs at Chain Analysis, and now she's a Senior Investigative Counsel for the House of Representatives. So she's got a stellar resume that makes me feel more comfortable as an American that if Kamala Harris is going to win, we're going to get some sane, sensible policy as it pertains to Bitcoin.
I just want all the new listeners to know that Marty was being very dryly sarcastic there. I think we have our work cut out for us. I think education is incredibly important. I think it's, you know, incredibly frustrating that we have, you know, quote unquote Bitcoiners that are really part of the greater crypto ecosystem that actually, you know, do not have our best interests at heart. So it's like, first you're like trying to get in front of these people. And then second of all, you're trying to revert all the bad education they received from the greater crypto lobby, which is just such an uphill battle. But I will say that if you do take a lesson from the early cypherpunk movement, and I've gone at length with this with Adam Back on Citadel Dispatch, it really is a, you know, if the prudent move is a two-pronged move. One is open discourse with regulators and politicians and fighting things in the courts. And according to, you know, once again, we're not lawyers. I had a lawyer on Citadel Dispatch yesterday, but we're not lawyers, fighting things in the courts. And then the second thing is like actually building out the tools and using the tools. And I had found way, way more hope and in the actionable change that is building out the tools and using the tools. But it's important to kind of fight this assault on freedom from both sides. I think that's the prudent move. I think it was quite effective in the early 90s. I think that battle never really ended, and we just need to keep it up.
Agreed. And I think it's pretty clear right now heading into this election that one side would be massively more beneficial for the industry than the other. Amanda Wick was described in a group chat I'm in as the FinCEN cat lady demon from hell. So if you want chain analysis, legal counsel dictating policy for Bitcoin and crypto more broadly, if you vote a particular way, this person may have some influence on that. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, and this is why I said the education piece, right? Because there's a couple of things, none of these people are Bitcoiners. They're not Bitcoiners yet. And Bitcoin does represent this paradigm shift. Like even just the general concept of self-custody is hard for a non-Bitcoiner to even understand that exists. So these simple metaphors, right? Like the open source software is just a safe that you hold your Bitcoin in. Obviously a safe manufacturer isn't a money transmitter just because you decide to hold cash in a safe. They never touch that money. I think, and then on the chain analysis side, right, this idea that tracking Bitcoin is strictly probability analysis and it's not absolute, and that we shouldn't be relying on black box, closed proprietary analysis from a firm like Chain Analysis as actual evidence to be used in the court of law. Like, I think a lot of people that are involved in these processes don't even realize that. I think there probably are a bunch of them that are malicious and particularly on the payroll of these companies and want them to be used as evidence. But I think there's a whole subset of people that just have no idea. And it's important to make that clear and succinct on actually what does this analysis represent? And then on the open source self-custody side, what is self-custody? What is open source software?
Yeah. Yeah. That's my biggest worry is that, I mean, I think the list of people that participated in that, I guess they were calling town hall meeting last night with the crypto industry and the Harris campaign, Kamala Harris didn't even show up. I don't think they have the best intentions, and I don't think any amount of education or logic would convince them to act pleasantly towards the industry. I think these people do have malicious intent and will move to execute on that intent if they do get a hold of power this time around. But we'll see. We'll keep you guys abreast of it. We've got a list we got to get to.
Actually, just real quick, am I correct that that was a virtual town hall, right?
Yes, yeah. Pre-recorded.
And like she didn't even, like all she had to do was like join a Zoom call, right? And she didn't join the Zoom call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she hasn't been making any appearances. It doesn't seem like she wants to get outed as a complete bumbling idiot, which I don't blame her. Egg on the face.
Huge shout out to Mab21, 21,000 sats in the Nostra live stream. If you're new here, you can get to the Nostra live stream by going to rhr.tv/stream. You do not need a Nostra account to use it. It's awesome. It's where the freaks dwell.
It is where the freaks dwell. Speaking of the U.S. government, and this is the big campaign talking point of the Harris campaign is mind your own damn business. Well, it's hard to mind your own damn business when your business gets leaked to hackers. Earlier this week, it became apparent that up to 2.9 billion records were stolen in a hack of the U.S. background check company. So this information includes social security numbers and other very sensitive personal information. So if you're a U.S. citizen, Matt was being he was hedging his bets in the title of this, but it seems likely that every single American citizen has had their social security number leaked in this hack.
Well, no, they said They say, if you read it, they say that, well, first of all, you never speak in absolutes, except for that when you say that. But they said that certain people that went through opt-out procedures weren't exposed in it. So like a handful of Americans weren't exposed in it. Obviously, this is larger than just America. Many, many people were exposed on it, and it includes address history. It includes where you lived previously and where you live currently, which is particularly dangerous, particularly frustrating. I mean, look, time and time again, we see that this data collection is bad for people, bad for the country. I think it represents a national security risk. It's incredibly difficult to opt out of. It's incredibly difficult to protect yourself from. And it doesn't actually stop bad actors. So we're just making ourselves vulnerable under the explanation that it's to stop criminals. Criminals get away with crime anyway. They use fake or stolen or bought information. And then average people that are productive members of society get constantly fucked over and over and over again. And it's incredibly frustrating. And it's one of those things that, like, this happens, like, literally almost 3 billion people are exposed. Like, how many people live on this planet? It's like 8 billion people. Like, almost half the fucking planet got exposed, and everyone just sighed and they're like, oh, another one? Like, you just expect it at this point. It's just incredibly frustrating.
It's not only incredibly frustrating, it is incredibly frustrating. And it's even more frustrating when you consider the fact that a lot of the increased regulation and compliance that the government is attempting to thrust on us and probably will continue to try to thrust on us is that we need this information for your safety. And as you said, and we've beaten the drum about for over half a decade now at this point, is that it makes you considerably more insecure when you're putting this data out there. And the government is not equipped to, as is obvious by this hack, is not equipped to secure this data properly. Luckily for you, hey, big data leak, 277 gigs of data, but it did not include email addresses and phone numbers, so they're safe. Everything else is out there.
The home addresses is so bad. I don't know. There will be pain. It's hard to believe that we don't go through a period of darkness before we enter the light. And I don't think that's a black pill take. I think that's, unfortunately, the white pill take is that the country we need to change our processes from like a foundational level in terms of data collection. And it should be treated as a national security issue. And I think Marty, you were way ahead on this as a framework and perspective. I think in America specifically, like, the states will lead the way. And we should be incredibly grateful that we have a situation where states have fundamental rights to push back against the federal government. And data collection should be one of those that should switch from being the norm and the expectation to the opposite, where we're trying to collect as little data as possible on our citizens. Like I said earlier, like, I had General Scrimeti on Citadel Dispatch yesterday. One of his main roles is suing the federal government. So I would love to see states like Tennessee, states like Texas, states like Wyoming start exerting their rights to protect the people that reside in their states and push back on this massive, massive surveillance apparatus that we have here in this country and globally.
Yeah, it should be a prerequisite for attorney generals in your local states. And every state has a different way of appointing an attorney general. I know Tennessee, it's appointed. I think you can vote for attorney generals in other states.
The Supreme Court appoints them, and it's an 8-year term. I think that's a great incentive. I think they shouldn't be running for office. Like, it should be a long-term role, and it should be appointed by Supreme Court. Like, that's great. How do they do it in Texas?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure exactly. I think it might be a point.
I mean, hands up. I only found this out like 3 weeks ago, so I don't pretend like I'm.
I think in Texas they may be appointed by the governor. I could be wrong though. But it should be prerequisite is if you want to be attorney general of this state, you should be willing to sue the federal government.
This rep of RHR was also brought to you by our good friends at Stack. Stack is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI to make it easy for you to complete complex tasks as a business. They are currently looking for a technical product manager for their coding bounties program. So if you want to go stackwork.com and apply for this job, I would highly do it. Paul and team at Stack are building one of the most incredible and exciting products on the market right now. If you listen to Citadel Dispatch or TFTC with Carlino from Digital Witness, he explained how Digital Witness used Stack to confirm the results of the Guatemalan presidential election last year. And Stack basically enables you to put out all these tasks. In the case of Digital Witness, they had a combination of AI and humans complete tasks to prove that votes looked a certain way and said a certain thing. And they got paid out in Bitcoin for it. So they're looking for a technical product manager for their bounties program. So go check them out. Stackwork, that's stakwork.com.
Next on the list, the UN Cybercrime Draft Convention approved unanimously despite widespread opposition. So the United Nations approved its first cybercrime treaty, a massive surveillance pact that mandates intrusive domestic surveillance measures and states' cooperation and surveillance and data sharing in a unanimous vote last week. And I'd like to remind you guys that none of you voted for United Nations, this unelected group of geopolitical allies dominated by the West, has voted to increase surveillance on you. You didn't vote for any of these people.
I hate to see it. Like, the trend is so bad. Mandibles and then Bitcoin Standard. I see people in the live chat are saying, Odell looks so good that it's making me think it's AI generated. Well, an AI would probably say Mandibles and then Bitcoin Standard. I don't know how to prove to you that it's not generated. Besides leashing a bunch of curse words, but now that I'm a father, I try and reduce that.
Well, you said white pill, which is a first, so the AI would not have been able to predict that.
Are you kidding me? I'm the hopeful one.
And that's actually what I remembered is like the extra strong white pill is that we're going through the darkness right now. Most people don't realize it, but
the darkness is going to get worse, though, Marty. You're aware of this, right?
I'm aware.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
But back to this UN cybercrime treaty, the cybercrime convention drastically expands government surveillance powers and enables widespread personal data sharing between UN member states and mandates member states to formalize money laundering offenses and cybercrimes to the extent that would criminalize hacking, whistleblowing, and security research, which is insane. This is coming from The Rage, the Lola Leitz writing about this. Like, if you're going to criminalize whistleblowing and security research, like, I'm sure we'll give you cyber crimes and the intent to criminalize quote unquote hacking, but officially criminalize whistleblowing, which is the act of individual actors basically making the public aware that a corporation, individual, or government is acting outside of their best interest, is just like mask off moment. Like, we can't have the plebs getting the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a massive doublespeak, like a classic doublespeak bullshit, right? Which is, oh, it's this cybercrime treaty or whatever. It's like, no, it's like Panopticon surveillance treaty. Bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, this is in line with something RFK Jr. said on a podcast with Ian Carroll earlier this week. I mean, just look at what's going on, not only with this treaty, but with UK hate crime laws and the posturing that their government and the EU government has been putting. Again, I know we're not big X fans here, but I think this is
an example.
I actually, it is a very powerful platform. But no, I mean, EU writing a letter to Elon on Monday saying, don't do this interview with Trump. He could spread hatred. And then UK, the enforcement arm of the UK government basically telling American citizens that if they spread hate speech as determined by the UK government on platforms like Twitter, that they could potentially be extradited to the UK and charged for their crimes. Like, this is insane. It is getting darker. If we're objectively looking at it from 2 weeks ago to today, the situation across the world has gotten darker, particularly as it pertains to free speech. Free speech is under attack. And when it's under attack, it's not because they're truly worried about inciting hatred or putting people in harm's way because of the speech that you put out in the world, but it's because they don't want people to get access to the truth, because they know that if more people have access to the truth, it'll become abundantly clear that these governments are objectively insane and completely incompetent and arguably do not have your interests at heart at all and are actively working against your best interests.
Yes. I would say that, first of all, I obviously stand with Elon here. What the overreach that they want to impose is absolutely ridiculous. The problem is it's all a show and you're falling for it. Elon has way too much to lose. He's going to act tough in public. He's going to bend the knee in private. And the way you solve this is, first of all, not a single individual controlling a platform, because that individual can get pressured. I mean, he has business interests that really fundamentally matter to his livelihood. He has Twitter ad revenue that he needs to X ad revenue that he needs to defend. He has Starlink contracts, and he has Tesla sales that he wants. And also, obviously, he wants to launch rockets into space. So there's plenty of pressure points where they can pressure him. And the way we solve this is through better technology. And not KYCing every single user under the idea that you're stopping bots, and just basically doing like the tee up to this kind of censorship attack, right? Which is fundamentally, like, if you are going to arrest people based on how they speak publicly on the internet, the worst situation would be if someone bought a platform and then immediately started trying to collect as much personal identifiable information on their power users as possible. It's absolutely fucking batshit crazy if you actually care about protecting the users. And I think ultimately, you know, we can go back and forth on arguing on, you know, morals and expectations. But I think even a person, a hypothetical person, let's say it's Elon, that means the best in the world, is vulnerable to this kind of action and will ultimately comply.
Yeah, no, I'm actually going to agree with you here. I recorded a TFTC episode with Dave Collum the other day that drops tomorrow. And he had this incredible analogy, because we were diving into the discussion of like the elite theory, like, is the little tech elite, which Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, and others that are part of really trying to take control to push the world in a better direction. And he's like, no, I don't think so. And had this really good analogy of like the competing views and perspectives that we're seeing right now that are discombobulating. It's like the GPS tracker rerouting your route, like every block, and it's just like confusing your brain. And so like this elite theory playing out, people like, oh no, they want to come save the world. It's like a reroute of the route, and you're just sitting there like, what's actually happening? And there probably is like a larger power game being played where there's a perceived transition of power that may have been preordained, if you will.
Look, the fundamental core of the problem is that personal responsibility is way more difficult than relying on someone else to protect you. So most people want to take the easy path, and they want to take the path where someone else will take care of them and work in their best interests. Unfortunately, that's not a realistic situation. That is never going to fucking happen. And people need to save themselves. They need to fucking use the tools and stand up for themselves. And that will always be the harder path. And most people will not do that without pain. So, of course, it's very easy for some influencer that is making bank, having their audience completely reliant on them, and they're on X, and there's massive sellouts, and it doesn't fucking matter, and they're making shit tons of money. It's easier for them to say, like, oh, Elon will protect us. But at the end of the day, people need to take personal responsibility, use the tools, and take the power back in their own hands. And it will start with few, and then it'll gradually result in many. But it's going to take time. It's going to take people actually feeling the pain.
Agreed. Bullish on Noster. We have official TFTC. Primal. Download Primal. Primal.net/TFTC. People were asking, is this the actual TFTC? Confirming here, live on air, not an AI bot. I'll prove that by saying Mandible's than Bitcoin Standard. And
I mean, that doesn't, that does prove it, because you haven't read Mandibles, so the AI would never say it. Like, just go into your favorite app store and just search Primal in your app store and just play around with it. Just test it out. Just use it. I don't expect you to go Noster only, but just play around with it. It's the future, and doesn't matter how many people hate that I post in caps. You can't stop me.
You can't. And I haven't set up a Strike business account for TFTC yet, so I just imported my personal Strike Ellen address, and that's like actually, and I don't have notifications on for Primal, but I haven't turned them off for Strike yet. And seeing the zaps roll in, that is empowering. Like, that is a fascinating feedback loop, is zaps rolling in. Like, I woke up this morning to 10 notifications from Strike from people zapping the TFTC account. My experience on Noster up to this point hasn't been that way, because I've turned off notifications on the apps. But with Strike, you need like the price updates, right? Like, if it goes down 5%, you need to know when to smash buy, or whether or not your price target has been hit.
I mean, people say like, oh, like Odell, like, don't you care about people? Like, why'd you delete your Twitter? Like, you have to tell them to stay humble, stack sats. Well, we're the lead investor of Strike. And if you have Strike installed, you'll get a notification to stay humble and stack sats. We just end around. You don't have to rely on Elon for that.
So this UN cybercrime thing, it's out there.
It's bad, man. Fuck this
are
shit.
We going, are people going to fight back against these unelected bureaucrats making laws that you then have to comply with? I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right. I don't think you should put up with it. But be aware of it. Speaking of states stepping in and doing overbearing regulation, Russia and Venezuela have blocked Signal Messenger within their borders. So user access to message. To the messenger signal is restricted due to violations of the requirements of the Russian legislation, whose fulfillment is necessary to prevent the use of the messenger for terrorist and extremist purposes. Russia's telecom watchdog Roskomnadzor told Interfax. Venezuela followed up with this censorship as well of the Signal messenger app. However, there are ways to get around this. Signal took to X, funnily enough, to let the world know, we're aware of reports that access to Signal has been blocked in some countries. As a reminder, Signal's built-in censorship circumvention feature might be able to help. If your connection is affected, go to Settings, Privacy, Advanced, and Censorship Circumvention. Turn it on.
I mean, so they also posted this on Mastodon, and there's a Mastodon bridge on Noster, so I saw it on Noster. You know, so Signal has... So first of all, the reason they ban Signal is because it fucking works. They don't ban Telegram. They don't ban the things they can spy on. They ban Signal. The proof is right there for you. It's similar to Bitcoin in that way. When a country tries to ban Bitcoin, it's proof of its value prop, in my opinion. Now, Signal's weak point is obviously that everything is encrypted, but you have to connect to Signal servers. So they can block the Signal... They can block the Signal servers, the main Signal servers. But any individual can run a Signal proxy. And so people in these countries can then connect to a Signal proxy. And the hope is that you have enough Signal proxies that they can't ban them all. So Signal is still usable in these areas. It's just much more difficult and there's higher friction. The next item in my story and in our list is about Simplex raising money. I think Simple X, not the herpes medication, can help here, because people can easily host their own servers and you don't rely on Simple X's servers. I also think that Keat, by the Hole Punch team, is incredibly promising on this front because it's properly P2P. Now, the unfortunate part about Keat is they're not open source yet. They're planning on open sourcing it in the future. I think they said December is when they're going to do it. Hopefully they do it sooner. It's hard to recommend until it's open source. Like, you need to be able to verify the code and what's running. But I will say, like, in practice using it, it works quite well, particularly for calls, for video calls and audio calls. SimpleX still has a lot of work to do in terms of message reliability, messages dropping. But, you know, it's encouraging to see these technologies improve. We need them to be resilient. If they can be easily banned, they will be banned. I know the Signal team is also working on other censorship circumvention techniques that will hopefully be implemented in the near future. But for now, if you do care about this cause, consider running a Signal proxy. It does go a long way.
Consider it. SimpleX also has, they're on the roadmap, the ability to write longer form email like messages and identifiable usernames. So at Snap, hand up, I haven't played around with in over a year, but it was pretty promising the first time I downloaded it.
And specifically, this investment round was, Jack Dorsey participated in it and some VC firm that I've never heard of. It's interesting that they went the VC path. I don't know the founder personally. I mean, I think this is a perfect use case for open source grants. I think it'll be hard to monetize. I think the expectation is they might monetize on the B2B side, like a more secure version of Slack. But I mean, knowing Jack, I assume he just does not really care what the business model is. He knows it's good for freedom, so he's willing to put some money behind it. So this is good to see. They have massive resources now. I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, but I think it was $1.3 million pre-seed round, which is a big deal. Like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, 1.3 from Jack Dorsey and Asymmetric Capital Partners, ACP.
Yeah.
So keep your eye out on SimpleX as they put those funds to work and begin building out.
Yeah, that for both of those, it's as simple as just go in your app store, search for SimpleX. Go to your app store, search for Keat, K-E-E-T. And I think there's something here with both of those, by the way. One of the real big pain points is contact discovery, like actually connecting with your contacts to begin with. Neither require or expect or ask for phone numbers. That has historically been the main way people move their address book from place to place and be able to like say like, oh, I want to message Marty. Like, how do I message Marty? Right now, you have to basically, for both Keat and SimpleX, you have to exchange a secret. Nostr, man. I think Nostr is the integration there. I think Nostr DMs fucking suck. They're encrypted by default, but the metadata leaks. I would like to see a SimpleX client that includes Nostr address book. I would like to see a Keat client that includes a Nostr address book. You could bridge both worlds, and then we can also kind of solve Nostr DMs at the same time without reinventing the wheel. Like, we have these great protocols. Open protocols win, right? Mash them together.
In that scenario, the only event that would be public is a sign into the app. Or is that even public?
It wouldn't be signing into the app necessarily. It would be for contact discovery. So you'd still do you would basically just use it for the handshake, just for like me linking up with you instead of me like scanning a QR code or clicking a link.
Oh, I understand that part. I understand that part.
You can use the Nostr to do that.
But like thinking of this interaction, yeah, you can use the Nostr. So that would be the event that's public.
I mean, look, I would rather you don't – I think you could do it without even signing anything. Like, I could use your address book if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I could just type in Marty's NPUB, his public key, not his private key, right? His public key is public and doesn't allow me to actually post events. And then I could get a connection there with anyone that you're following, or I can put in my EnPub, or I can put in anyone else's. All they would need to do is, instead of that link that, you know, like right now, like SimpleX like generates a link. I could sign an event for my NSEC, for my Nostr identity, that is essentially that connection pairing string. And then you can just pull that event from relays and then you can connect. I mean, obviously it's a little bit deeper than that, but that's the, that's the overarching theme there.
Yeah. That seems like the most private future too. And then like, if the event leak is pulling somebody's EnPub, like that gives everybody, what's it called? Like deniability. What's the deniability term? Plausible deniability.
Plausible deniability.
Cause yeah. Like, it's like anybody could pull any EnPub. Like, how do you know that's me pulling my EnPub?
Yeah, I think both teams would probably, their answer would be like, we don't want to rely on centralized servers. And even though anyone can run a relay, those are centralized servers. But you always still have the fallback of like no contact discovery, and I'm just scanning Marty's QR code to connect. But it'd be nice to have a lower friction way of doing that in a situation where they don't ban every relay. Like, I think it's going to be, I think Nostr is a weird one specifically because it's not P2P, and it's actually not decentralized. It's, you know, you have a bunch of centralized servers that anyone can run that are incredibly easy to interoperate between, right? Like, it's an open standard. And I think what happens at scale when we start to see censorship increase, because countries are not going to stop at trying to ban X and stop and ban Signal. Like, if Nostr is successful, they're going to try and ban Nostr. And what are they going to do? They're going to ban some of the large relays. They're going to make it very difficult for you to connect to those relays. They're going to ban VPN usage, so you can't just basically just use a VPN to route around any kind of those blocks. I think VPN tools will improve, but I also think like we'll see very creative ways for Nostr relays to be exposed to the greater internet and people to access them. And so many people can run them that in practice, banning it will be practically impossible.
Agreed. You're not going to like this, but most of the people listening to the live stream right now are on X. Hopefully you're getting good information here. We do have our live stream at rhr.tv/stream if you want to join us in the zap.stream. But if you're on X,
you almost fucked it up.
If you want to get this message out to people, retweet it. Let's get it out. We're approaching Alex Jones's live stream right now too. We're about 1/100th of the way there. So let's see if we can eat into that.
1/100th of the way there. Yeah, I mean, to Marty's point, like and subscribe. You know, if you use YouTube, subscribe across all channels, TFTC, Citadel Dispatch, retweet, press the retweet button.
Do it all.
And then humbly delete your X and your YouTube account and go Nostr only.
Yes. Next up on the list, we have a story coming out of Nigeria. Nigerian Bitcoiner sues the government for the right to own, acquire, and trade Bitcoin. So this is Nigerian Bitcoiner and politician James Otuter, who has taken a bold legal stance to advocate for the fundamental rights of Nigerians to own, use, and trade Bitcoin, stablecoins, and other digital assets. Otuter said, "It is our submission that the rights to acquire Bitcoin and other digital assets have been severely infringed on as the Federal Republic of Nigeria and its elite agencies have forced telecom companies to prevent and restrict innocent Nigerian citizens from acquiring, holding, and accessing these assets. The lawsuit seeks the following remedies: immediate removal of the block of all crypto exchanges and online platforms, ensuring unrestricted access to all Nigerians, a declaration that the right of every Bitcoin, USDT, and other cryptocurrency holder is protected and guaranteed, a declaration that the infringement, victimization, and human rights violations of those who own, use, and trade Bitcoin and USDT and other cryptocurrencies in Nigeria, who's ever doing the no bullshit Bitcoin copy needs to do spell check, is unlawful, unconstitutional, and illegal, establishment of regulations for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency assets within the Nigerian financial ecosystem, recognizing their distinct categories and regulating Bitcoin as a commodity. And I'll put my hand up. I got to do a spell check too. I have spelling mistakes, so I don't want to throw too much shade at No Bullshit Bitcoin. But this is encouraging to see how Nigeria, which for many years has had a very aggressive negative stance towards Bitcoin companies and individual Bitcoiners within the Nigerian borders, started with the Women's March movement, which had their bank accounts cut off, and then they had the transition to BTC Pay Server to accept donations. Fast forward to when they tried to remove cash notes from their economy, and they completely fumbled that ball, led to an economic and currency crisis. And they when people tried to flee that crisis to the safe haven of Bitcoin, the government saw that was happening and shut the doors. And then on top of that, Nigeria is one of the first countries to officially launch a CBDC. And you don't have it on the list, but important to note, the Nigerian government is currently holding a Binance employee, a mid-level Binance employee, essentially hostage. And apparently he's rotting away in a Nigerian prison cell, unable to get medical help. And many people are thinking that he may potentially die in prison. And the current administration here in the United States is doing nothing to extradite that individual, who I believe is American.
I mean, that's fucked up. I think this story just highlights that it's important to fight these transgressions on freedom from multiple different directions. And whoever this person is that is filing this lawsuit, hats off to you. I'm sure you're putting yourself and your family at massive risk doing it. But it's quite important work.
It really is. And that's what it takes. If not you, then who? Even if you're living in a country with despotic rulers, like that's what I am. Spartacus, we've said this many times on the show. So you just need one person to stand up and say, you know what, screw this. I know this is right. I know this is an inalienable human right that we should all have access to, the right to sound peer-to-peer digital cash that cannot be controlled by any government, corporation, or central bank. And you need to instill that confidence in people. And so this act by Otwitter out of Nigeria is one of those acts. So shout out to him. And like Matt said, it was a bold move, probably not an easy decision to make considering the climate that exists within the Nigerian government right now. But if we're going to win this battle for freedom in the digital age, it's going to take a lot of bold moves to be made. And so this is the bold move of the week. Maybe we got a new segment here, bold move of the week, that we highlight.
You know, when we first started RHR, I wanted there to be a shit ton of segments, and it like took us 6 years to add the first segment. I think it would, and it also took me 6 years to improve my camera setup. So it would be funny if then it's just like in 6 months, we just have like 10 different gradually.
The first comment about your setup was negative. Everyone since then has been positive. Setup looks
who
killer.
Who is negative? I missed the negative one.
The guy who asked you to blink if you're in a hostage situation.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, I think that was from a point of caring.
It was. We are, I mean, this is an unofficial section of the week, the OpenSats section of the week. OpenSats announces a new round of grants focused on Bitcoin Core. OpenSats, a nonprofit focused on supporting the development of Bitcoin. Or I don't have to read that, but the grants that were made this week, you can take it. TDB3.
No, go for it, Marty.
So TDB3, who's working on Bitcoin Core stability, security, and performance by reviewing and authoring pull requests with over 300 open PRs. His initial focus will be maintenance, bug fixing, and feature enhancement, very essential actions within the Bitcoin Core repository. Many people focus heavily on big PRs and writing new code and fixing up code, but we need review, maintenance, and bug fixing. So shout out to TDB3 and shout out to OpenSats for giving him a grant. David Gumberg is going to be optimizing the initial block download process for Bitcoin Core nodes, aiming to reduce time, bandwidth, and storage challenges. This is going to be imperative as the network grows, not only the network, but the chain state, the ability to download the Bitcoin software and run your own full node is imperative, and reducing the time and more importantly, the amount of bandwidth it takes to do that and storage it takes to do that will be completely necessary to ensure that enough individuals around the world can run and operate a full node. So that is very important work as well. HODLinator, who's going to enhance Bitcoin Core by reviewing code, addressing performance issues, improving logging, debugging, and refining tests. So more review and bug tests there. And then the Bitcoin Core app, which modernizes the user interface by shifting to the Qt QML framework, enhances user experience with the input from the Bitcoin design community, which aims to lower barriers, promote self-custody, enhance privacy, and increase node participation. That is extremely encouraging to see. I've said it many times on this show and the others that I've been on and host myself. Design is poorly lacking in the Bitcoin space, particularly around the protocol level, Bitcoin Core specifically. So the fact that there's going to be people working on bringing better design principles to Bitcoin Core once you download it is extremely important and exciting to see. And it's also important to note that it's now possible due to the many years of work that people like Russ Yanofsky and others put in to separate the node from the GUI. I think we're finally at a point where now that those are separated, not only the node from the GUI, but the node from the wallet and the GUI are all separated. Now you can build in a more modular fashion. So Herculean efforts that took many years to do, very boring work, or I think this is a product of that hard work that should be recognized, which is we now have the ability to focus on building a proper GUI for Bitcoin Core.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite proud of our team at OpenSats. We're not perfect. We're working through it. We're trying to work at a scale that I don't think has ever really been done before, trying to work at a level of efficiency and transparency that has never been done before in the nonprofit space. Obviously, we work on a Bitcoin standard. Either today or tomorrow, our monthly payments will go out to grant recipients in 40 plus countries. And that's just always beautiful to see. And it happens every month. And we're just going to keep pushing forward, and we're never going to stop. So cheers to that. Yeah.
And on this note, you don't have it on the list, but I want to bring it up because another Herculean effort that got merged this week was Testnet 4. I caught up with Fabian Jahr, who's a Bitcoin Core contributor from Germany. In Nashville, we were talking about Testnet 4 and the fact that it was taking quite a while to get merged and pushed live, and that happened this week. So that's a big update, and I know a lot of the developers that are starving for testnet coins are really happy that that finally launched and should lead to better testing for people working on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, more importantly, Fabian is working on cross-input signature aggregation research, CISA, which should both provide substantial privacy gains and cost savings at the same time, which is exactly what you want to see. You want to see private transactions actually save you money. That's how we want to see incentives work.
Yes.
Great, dude.
Shout out to everybody. All this darkness is falling on us, but this is the signal. This is the light. People actually funding and building out the freedom tech that's going to get us out of this mess. It's happening. It's happening right before your eyes, freaks. Most people don't realize it, but if you're here listening, you know. And now we're on to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, which is coming out of Venezuela, which has restricted access to Binance and Blocks X amid post-election upheaval. Venezuelans and Blocks X, I don't know, we'll figure out the story. Venezuelans are now struggling to access Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange, like several company websites in different segments in Venezuela, including social media. Binance's pages have been facing access restrictions, Binance announced. Binance is a peer-to-peer exchange popular with Venezuelans in search of U.S. dollar, stable coins, and Bitcoin to escape the regime's ongoing devaluation of the Bolivar. With Binance now inaccessible, many find themselves financially trapped and increasingly vulnerable to a country where 82% live in poverty and 53% live in extreme poverty. alongside censoring Binance, Maduro has also blocked access to the social media platform X for 10 days, revoked passports arbitrarily, and detained over 2,000 activists, lawyers, opposition figures, and civilians protesting the fraudulent election results. So Maduro doesn't want to lose the grip of his dictatorship in Venezuela, which has had calamitous implications for Venezuelan citizens. Go to financialfreedomreport.org to sign up for the Human Rights Foundation newsletter, which highlights stories like this and others happening around the world. But yeah, I mean, Venezuela, probably one of the best case studies in what happens when you fuck up the money and how it can easily lead to despotic regimes taking over and trying to prevent you from living your life in a free fashion. Not only losing control of the money leads to this, but overt communist socialist policies lead to this.
Yeah, I mean, the money was almost a symptom after the fact, right? Like, this was one of the most promising capitalist Latin American countries. And unfortunately, their specific breed of socialism with a heavy authoritarian dictator in Chavez, like, really just destroyed that economy and destroyed that government.
In a very short amount of time too. This is 15 years. This has happened.
Tragedy. And hopefully, you know, the Venezuelan people are strong. I have a lot of friends that are Venezuelan, and they're very strong people, and their culture is very strong, and they have the tools available to them. So, hopefully these, you know, next few years it'll be darkness first, but hopefully it seems like there's light at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, just shout out to everyone on the ground fighting. It's tough out there.
Yeah. And speaking of darkness there, maybe they have light at the end of the tunnel. Darkness is consuming the U.S. Logan, pull up the tweet. Going back to what we discussed at the beginning of the episode, you got to be vigilant and make sure that the Maduro / Chavismo type of socialism doesn't come to the U.S. And here is the prospective vice president on the Democratic side, and just some of his thoughts.
Don't ever shy away from our progressive values. One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness. Just do the damn work. Don't.
These people are overtly socialist. Kamala Harris as well has said that we don't need equality of opportunity. We need equality of outcome. We need to make sure that everybody gets an equitable share of what we are producing here in the United States. So don't think it can't come here. There are forces who would love to bring it here. And with that, we have ended the Human Rights Foundation section.
Well, before we continue to the next thing on the list, like, I see Ride or Die Freak, Weirdo Robot, in the comments saying, now, man, true communism just hasn't been tried yet. And I know that's a reaction to my framing. As far as I'm concerned, obviously, like, I don't think socialism or communism could ever work. I know, but there's something about this specific topic that it's just like abound with psyops and doublespeak, because first of all, like, yeah, that is a claim that I've heard by, you know, socialism defenders or proponents many times. They're like, oh, you know, that person was a dictator. It wasn't like real socialism or whatever. But then also at the same time, like, I feel like it's fucked up to just give Chavez or Maduro like the pass that like they're actually socialist either, because it's like, no, like, your policy is just, you know, you're the government and everyone should just be subservient to you. So like they can go fuck themselves, but also like we need free markets. Like we need both. But to me, it's just like such a psyop heavy topic.
Well, it's because true socialism's never been tried, because it's not really the end goal. The end goal is dictatorial control over the means of production and the flow of capital throughout an economy. All right, on to, because we got to jump here. We got 12 minutes before we have to jump. onto the top four boost from Bitcoin is the only free market. Rabbit hole recap number 317. Eric99 boosted 50,000 sats. Stay humble, stack sats.
Great advice.
I love this name. At Biggles boosted 20,000 sats. Love the deep dives into Bitcoin's crazy world. Thank you, Biggles. Love that you're joining us.
Thanks for the boost.
At Blazar, 4151, 5,000 sats, non-tech pleb here, always listening and interested in what y'all had to say. Just heard about Mutiny Wallet and was bummed because I was hoping to learn about Fediment through them, and it seemed cool. Move some, move some sats there, but never could find any mints to join. Any tips on Fediment and where to go hook up with one? Yes, download the Fedi app, go to your app store and search Fedi. They just officially launched their app last week, August 6th. So it's been out in the wild for 9 days now, and they have a really seamless UX flow and onboarding on some mints that that are available in the app now. Not a lot to choose from at the moment, but they hope that they will get the process to create a mint and offer it to others more seamless in the months to come. So if you want to check out Fedi Mints, Blazar, you can go download the Fedi app. And then if you're just interested in Chami and eCash more generally, you can also download a bunch of applications that are being built on the Cashew Chami Mint protocol, eCash protocol. Nutsack is one of them that we talked about last week. That's a good one. What other cashew mints would you recommend? Cashew apps.
I didn't want to say anything just so that they'd have a clean cut on what you just said. I really like cashew.me. It's a PWA app. It just runs in your browser. There's Minibits. Minibits is a solid app. But yeah, the cashew ecosystem is growing quite organically and virally in a pretty amazing way to watch. We spoke at length about what happened with Mutiny last week, and I don't really feel the need to add much. I think it's important that we're transparent with you freaks. I think a lot of influencers in the space and people with large audiences are they just straight up lie all the time and aren't very transparent. There is one conspiracy theory that I don't think I touched on last week, but I just want to squash real quick. Like, Mutiny walking away from Fediment has nothing to do with money. They had plenty of resources available to them.
I've got nothing to add there. I didn't see that theory popping around. I was interested to see what you're going to say. Bad theory, bad rumor. Last boost from last week's episode, blockchain bug, 5,000 sats and just 3 clap emojis. Thank you. Thank you for clapping, sir. You can't tell if people are clapping. We know they're commenting. We know they're following along. I wonder how many people are watching and clapping as they watch and listen.
Marty, my screen's kind of far away from me. I see that Average Gary gave 21,000 sats, Zaps 21,000 sats in the Nostra live stream. And then there's one other person besides Mav21 who we already called out. Is that Livstradamus who gave the other 21,000 sats?
I may be behind. I see Wizard Honey Badger 2 is at 21,000 sats.
Yeah, that's Average Gary.
Did TFTC zap today? TFTC did not zap because I don't have the zapping wallet connected yet.
Did you zap today?
I have zapped today.
No, but who's the other one in between him and Mav21 at the top?
Well, we've got many in between them. We've got Muni, zap 69 sats. Let's go.
No, I see 21,000 sats at the top. Do you not see that?
Oh, yeah. Silent Link. Happy Bitcoin Thursday, freaks.
Who is that from?
Silent Link.
Oh, thank you, sir. Go to silent.link. Great place to get a eSIM. You get data. Don't do the one with the phone number. It's just like a worse deal and it works less good. Get the one that's no number, data only. If you need to use a phone number for something, you can use a VoIP app like Hushed or MySudo or something like that. But you do the data only one. You can re-up it with Lightning. It works really well. Roaming is incredibly cheap. It works globally. And it requires no personal information. Incredibly useful tool. Great way to spend Bitcoin.
Silent.link. On to the software update section of the show. This is an exciting one, a project we've been talking about for years now that would be massively beneficial to the Lightning Network when it is robust and widely adopted. Validating Lightning Signer version 0.12 has been released, the Benevolent Basilisk release. And so with this update, they're inviting Lightning developers and companies to try it out to provide feedback that will shape the future of VLS releases. The latest release package enhanced security features, LSS support, logging improvements, and various bug fixes and updates. I know Stackwork, sponsor of this show, go check out Stackwork if you don't know what they're up to. Paul Atoy has been beating the drum about validating Lightning signers for many years now. And so for any who are unaware of what this would do, it allows you to separate the node from the private key on the Lightning Network. And so you can run a node in the cloud and keep the key outside the cloud, so you can do remote signing. And so that increases the security of people running Lightning nodes. And so if and when this becomes mature and widely adopted, it will be a significant security increase for people running Lightning infrastructure.
Yeah, this is a big deal. OpenSats proudly supports validating Lightning Signer project. By the way, I mean, to those who don't know, you can go to opensats.org and you can donate and get a tax deduction, or you can donate anonymously if you want to, if you don't want the tax deduction, if you want to support projects like this. But yeah, at the core, it's, you know, the golden rule of Bitcoin security has been, you know, if you're holding a lot of Bitcoin, you should keep that those keys offline. Unfortunately, if you're running a Lightning node, you've had to always keep those keys online. And that poses a massive risk for people that are running large Lightning nodes. So it'd be very crucial for us to get to a point where you can actually keep those keys offline and still run a Lightning node as Bitcoin value increases, as liquidity requirements on Lightning increases. This will become even more important. So crucial project. And just to go back real quick on the silent.link explanation, silent.link did comment in the comments. The plan I'm talking about is called Data Plus. Like, you get cheaper prices and you get better speeds. Like the US identity ones or the UK identity ones that give you a phone number, you don't get the top line speeds that you would get if you do Data Plus. So, I mean, my personal recommendation is to pick the Data Plus eSIMs. It really is a game changer. If you use it, you feel like you're living in the future.
Yeah. And weird robot saying in the comments that when you sign up for Silent Link, your penis grows at least an inch. So take that into consideration too.
It's true.
It's true. I could attest to it. Next up on the list, the launch of Bankify, which can help you turn cashew mints into Lightning wallets with Nostr Wallet Connect. This is a cool project to see because it's what you like to see is individuals having a problem and then going to build something to solve that. And so the developer of Bankify said that the launch of Bankify is a response to his frustration that he's had with not enough custodial Bitcoin wallets supporting Nostr Wallet Connect. With that being said, this is experimental. He made this app for testing purposes, and I warn you, do not put money in it unless you're happy to lose the money for the pursuit of science and the enrichment of someone who isn't you. Bankify is a simple storage service that does those things automatically in the background, including managing eCash, and just gives you nice and easy send and receive buttons.
The reason I put this in the list is because, you know, I think it's a perfect example of this idea of mixing and matching open protocols to innovate in a permissionless way, right? So in this case, the NWC spec is open and interoperable. That's Nostr Wallet Connect. It's a way to initiate payments through the Nostr network. And Cashew has open API hooks as a protocol, as an open protocol. So this guy was able to connect the two relatively easily. But yes, as Marty said, it's incredibly experimental. But shout out to him for his experimental disclosure. I enjoyed the wording.
I did as well. And if somebody has leveraged Osterwalt Connect, particularly with Albi, to build a product, like it's fucking magic. Yeah, I said it in a conversation I recorded earlier this morning for TFTC, but I think people are really underappreciating. I don't think anybody watching this, but if you're new to this show, it is important to grasp the gravity of the ability to have interoperability, not only amongst Bitcoin apps, but now as Noster continues to develop, the Lightning Network continues to develop, these eCash mints continue to develop. You have this interoperability across all these different protocols, which is going to unlock insane productivity and insane use cases that are hopefully, if the protocols are built out correctly, extremely robust and hard to stop.
Damn right.
Yeah. Last on the list. Surprised you put this on the list. I wonder what you have to say about it. El Salvador attracts $1.6 billion for port infrastructure development near the Bitcoin city.
What's your opinion on this?
Good to see El Salvador attracting capital. So this comes from the Turkish company Yilport to develop two seaports. Very important if you want to grow your economy to get seaports. However, I think the Bitcoin city is an idiotic idea. You can't centrally plan a whole city. Cities are supposed to be emergent. I think we need to get the book Strong Town into the hand of Nayib Bukele. Like, do not go and try to build the city. It's not going to work out well for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's my take. humanity always wants, there's been people in every generation that's like, we're going to centrally plan the best city ever. And it's just always ruins. It never works. One of my favorites is Brasilia, which was the centrally planned capital city of Brazil. Go down that rabbit hole. If you're bored this week, go down that rabbit hole. And I've been, more not necessarily critical of El Salvador and the Bukele regime, but constantly verifying and not taking things at face value. It's cool to see. It's cool to see this officially is their largest private external investment they've ever received, right? And it's a country of 6 million people that has basically been written off, right? And obviously their mainstay policy objective is not only a Bitcoin standard, but accumulating as much Bitcoin as possible. And it's pretty crazy to just witness, private entities realizing like this is a place that I want to invest my money. Like they can invest their money in a million different ways. And they chose to invest it in seaports in an undeveloped area of El Salvador. A lot of it too, a lot of money. So shout out to them on that one.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's part of like the sovereign individual thesis, like playing out in real time. It's like, you're going to get these capitalist actors who want to help each other. And one side of this party is, or this transaction is a small country in El Salvador. And the other is a Turkish seaport company. It's like, yeah, we'll invest $1.6 billion. And that's like, if you're thinking like the whole Bitcoin city thing is completely objectively stupid. Like you can't centrally plan a city. Do not try to do that. But thinking of like order of operations to helping revive an economy, seaports make a lot of sense. Like you need to import and export things. You're going to need seaports to do that.
Bullish on ports, airports, yes, seaports, land ports.
Yeah, truck ports. Bearish on centrally planned cities. Read Strong Towns. Anybody
else? Railways, infrastructure. Yeah,
somebody get Strong Towns in the hands of the Bukele administration. It's not going to work. The centrally planned city.
I will say, isn't BlackRock, it's one of the evil financial entities that's like, we need to privatize as much American infrastructure as possible. And I'm sure they have,
That might be Blackstone, not BlackRock.
Okay. What is one of them? Like comic book villain levels of incentive structures there. But it makes sense to me. Like airports fucking suck. Like, why are they not run for profit? they should be run for profit. Like, they shouldn't be like government entities. I think that can, like, I know that's like kind of off topic a little bit, but not in this case, because this is going to be like a privatized seaport. More privatized infrastructure, I think will be better. I think you might ask yourself, who will build the roads? Well, if we let people build the roads, they'll build them.
Yes. And I think to your point too, about like the BlackRock, Blackstone, whoever it is, supervillain, is as with a lot of things that we discuss on our show, there's nuance. It's like, I completely agree. You want private companies doing a lot of this stuff. And I think what rubs me the wrong way about like Blackstone, BlackRock being the ones to do this is they are cantillionaires, completely sucking from the benefits of the monetary spigot. And so they have this undue status that they don't really deserve. And they're able to leverage that to go buy up a bunch of properties and invest in things, and probably aren't the most well-equipped to do it. It should be like, this transaction makes a lot of sense. You have a Turkish seaport company saying, we'll build ports and invest in ports in El Salvador. That's who should be doing it, not money managers sucking the teat of the Cantillion effect.
Marty, I think we need a wrap. I love you, freaks. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love. Ta-kee!